You're listening to World Oil Deep Dive, conversations with energy industry leaders and engineers about the market trends and technologies shaping the oil and gas industry. Now, here's this week's episode.
Welcome back, everybody. We're on day two of SPE's HFTC conference in the Woodlands, recording at my favorite place, Blend Bar. I always got to plug them because they generously let us use this room back here, and you can see how beautiful it is, right, guys?
This is beautiful, nice.
And so if you're ever in the Woodlands and you want some food and cigars and whiskey, this is the place. You guys definitely stop by here. You're going to enjoy our next guest from IWS. Tell the folks, what you do, what your role is at IWS, and kind of what the company does.
All right. So Tracy Gray, I'm the Director of Marketing and Strategy at Intelligent Wellhead Systems. And in layman's terms, I'll say that a lot of what we do is automation of valve management. So hardware with a software platform combined to bring safety and efficiency to the completion side of the business.
Okay, excellent. And so it sounds like she does everything. Bob, what do you do?
Yeah, so my name is Bob Duncan, VP of product. So look after the engineering, software development, and product management groups. And our primary functions are, of course, to identify what new products to build, go ahead and build them, and then deploy and maintain them from a support perspective.
Right. So now tell us a little bit something about the technology. So using automation and valves to increase safety, right? So give us some examples of why that's important. Why would you need to automate that in the first place? I mean, we have guys who do it by hand now, right?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, and for those that have been in the industry for, you know, really any length of time here, more than a couple of years, would have known that, you know, back in the day, you know, a lot of these operations took place on just single well, right?
Right.
So, you know, you would perforate the well and then frack it, perforate, frack. And that was, you know, improved the production of the well, of course, you know, that's where we got here today. But in order to gain more efficiencies, they started to drill multiple wells on a pad, right? So you have these multi-well pads spring up.
Right.
That allowed the fracking operation to start kind of performing what they would call today like simultaneous operation.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you can go ahead and perforate the wells and while frack is catching up behind you and eventually wireline's, you know, keeping ahead of frack, right?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of activity going on there and at that point you're working underneath suspended loads around pressure because you've got, you know, you're moving the wireline lubricator around and you're fracking at the same time. And there was a lot of use of manual valves, and some people still do that today. However, in order to get more efficient and safer, they started to introduce the use of hydraulically actuated valves. So this allowed, your valve technician or whoever was responsible for closing them to stand, you know, up to 75 feet away and function from the safety of an accumulator panel.
Right.
But keep in mind, you know, there's a lot of operations ongoing, and these wells have, you know, 20 to 50, 60, 70 stages. They operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, right? So at some point there, you know, it's arguable as a game of numbers as right. to when something might go wrong, right?
It's not if, it's when.
It's not right. if or when, right? And I mean, if you look on top of that, you know, we're seeing a bigger, widespread use of different styles of frack as well, like simul-fracking where you're now treating two wells or even trimul-frack. Some point here is just, you know, n number of fracks, right?
Right.
And of course, to keep up with that, you know, you need to have perforate quicker or perforate more. So introduce more wireline trucks. If it doesn't take very long, you're quickly looking at this pad that has quite a lot of activity ongoing at yep. all different steps of the process. And, you know, that's where we saw an opportunity at IWS to see how could we prevent some of these problems. Those problems I'm talking about, you know, generally, you know, shut-ins on wireline or shut-in on frack.
Right.
And as these operations get more and more complex, there's more and more issues that need to be resolved. If you really think about it, you took what used to take X number of days and really just compressed it. And in some cases, you're now layering it on top of each other as well.
Right.
So we had our first proprietary sensor that we built at IWS. We call it the Envision Spool. And it was developed for some other reasons, but we saw an application for it in plug and perforate where you could detect whether there's wireline in a well.
Oh, so, nice. So you wouldn't shut the valve because it knows that there's wireline.
That's
there.
Right. So we got the signal from the spool and figured, all right, we know when there's something in the well. Let's hook that up to a lockout device that we can attach to the control valves.
Nice.
And it's, you know, it's like process control.
Right.
But for, you know, temporary installation on frac sites. So that's kind of where it started, and then we expanded out from there. We added pressure sensors to prevent shut-ins on frac. We added more instrumentation, like valve position sensors, so now we can now get a digital signal of the state of the wellhead, which effectively allowed us to create a digital twin. And from that point, we now knew when a person had functioned a valve, when that valve was functioned, and we could program in a standard operating procedure.
Right.
That's really where we took a big leap in our technical capability. So we can go to a customer and say, what's your SOP? And they tell us, and we translate that into our software, create all number of different wellhead configurations. You know, everybody's running things slightly differently.
Right.
And that's one of the things about our technology. It was just built as a bolt-on solution, right? You don't have to replace your current vendors or relearn anything. Or
oh, nice.
Build
yeah,
new
yeah.
equipment. This takes what is out there already and sort of modernizes it a little bit.
Yeah.
So as it continues to develop, we got more and more complex with the safety features that we could add in. And also we were able to keep up with the changes in the market, right? And it's all happening pretty quick, relatively quick, right?
Right.
So, you know, like I said earlier, we've got simulfracs and continuous pumping and things like that nowadays, which is... You know, it's not to say they weren't doing it before, but it's getting more and more common. So we started to do all of this sort of valve management process, and we were building on our logic and control capabilities. And then, you know, a few years ago, we introduced digital valve control, which you could, you know, you can start to look at and think, all right, that's a pretty big step change.
Yeah, right.
Because now you can control the valves digitally, right? And so our users now could just function valves from a tablet wherever they are on site, and... We could also distribute who controls the valves.
Right.
So it really depends on how the customer wants to run it. But, you know, for instance, you can have wireline function the wireline valves when they're operating on the well. You can have frac function their valves when they're operating on the well. So it does sort of make sense for them to be able to do it. They know what's going on. But we have those layered controls, you know, safety interlocks is what we call them in place right. as well to help make decisions and just reduce what a human needs to do. And really, it's just about helping them get their job done faster. And we had some interesting other sort of offshoots from this technology, right? It being part of the workflow, you know, we introduced what we call a digital handshake that, you know, effectively replaced the paper clipboard people used to sign off
yeah, yeah.
or a valve that would function as more of an administrative control. But that gave us some really useful contextual information about the activity on site. And, we were also aggregating frac and wireline data and, you know, any data source that the customer wanted. And we could now, as part of the workflow, identify where this data belonged. So which well, what stage, you know, did they complete the stage and all those kinds of things. So it took away the need for human intervention to, you know, basically manually flag all of the data.
I got a question on that. So you're in charge of developing that. How does that grow? Was that organically? Like, was it a client who was like, hey, what if we could do it like this? Or was it like, hey, wait a second, you know, we have these components here, we see it to be easy to add this component to be of value to the client? I mean, how do you guys...
It's a combination of both.
Yeah.
Some of it, you know, there's obviously our input from our customers. Those who, anybody who's listening in knows we value it a lot and we listen. And that's paid dividends on what the product is today. And there's other cases where we've seen opportunities to say, hey, if we had this piece of information that would allow us to solve this other problem, right? And we go about it in various different ways, of course. You know, like the valve position sensors, everybody, you know, that was a no-brainer, right?
Yeah,
everybody,
exactly, yeah.
You know, instead of manually have to look and see what's going on, we needed it for improved control systems. So it was, yeah, really the next logical step for what we should do. And it's all kind of built on top of each other. You know, all of these additions that we've made, have enabled us to create a very robust, reliable, and flexible system, to the point now where we're about to be releasing our automated valve control. So that's a technology now that we have the ability to function the valves. The logical step, of course, was hit start and let it run, right?
Right, enough exactly.
Safety checks in place to enable that to happen. So it's a really exciting time now.
Because you can program that in, right? You can say, okay, here's the procedure, just do this, and then it just goes through and does it faster and more accurately than a human could, right?
Yeah, and you know the point there about, you know, this thing, it doesn't sleep, it doesn't get tired, right?
Right, exactly.
You know, like the machine. And as these operations get more and more complex, you know, we also keep in mind, you know, we have less and less people entering the industry, right? We have a lot of experience leaving it too. So the operations are getting more complex, you know, and the people who are running it, you know, there's less and less experienced people left behind to run these jobs. So, you know, the timing for the introduction of technology to help enable who's left to do more has never really been better, right?
Yeah, this is a theme that comes up a lot in discussions with companies. I mean, workforce, absence of workforce, and you know, all of the knowledge basically retiring, leaving the business. It is, I think in that respect, automation and autonomous operations eventually are going to be the savior of our business, right? I mean, that's how people are going to operate. So, Trace, I got a question for you then.
Yes.
So, obviously, you guys have this in the field and stuff.
Yep.
Can you give me a little background about what's been happening there? Is it, you've done the trials and everything? How's the adoption of this technology?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back one step. You asked about the trials. We actually kicked off last year a customer advisory board.
So
we've got seven operators who are actually sitting on a board with us who help give us input on our technology. And so it's worked extremely well. We've gotten great input from them. We get guidance on new technology, what's going on in the market. We hear from them what they want in the field. But then they also will trial some of our new stuff. So it's been a great outlet working with them to be able to, you know, figure out what's next.
Here's a quick question on that. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm always curious. So you got an advisory board. These guys don't get paid. You don't pay them, right? They just come in there and they're like, hey, man, we're going to help you prove out your stuff.
Yep.
What do they get out of it in the end? Do you like, hey, we'll give you the first ones off the line for free or at a 50% discount or something? How does that work?
Honestly, we kicked this off, I guess, in November of last year, not really knowing how this is how it would work.
Right.
But we had so many eager clients wanting to be part
nice.
Of it.
Yeah.
And in fact, they will volunteer to trial our products. Yeah.
Nice.
So, and we have a few going on now. We'll have more. We have another advisory board meeting in a couple of weeks. We'll have more to come out of that. But we've decided as an industry group, let's get together and let's make a difference together in the completions market. And so one of the things that we're working on as a next step is trying to come up with a common data model for completions. Drilling has had it for a while. Right. Completion seems to be a bit of a mess. So we've been working together as a group to put this together. And the goal is to have it completed, hopefully before the end of the year, and get it published so that we can start getting some consistency in the data to make this easier.
Yeah. Because data consistency, I mean, that's the base of all of the automation or whatever. Everything has to be, you know, done the same parameters. I mean, you're missing one parameter and it's like, oh, sorry, we can't do that, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's definitely not good. So tell us then about the field trials results. I mean, is there, obviously there's got to be an increase in efficiency if you're not having humans doing that. Do we have numbers on that?
Numbers ways, yeah. I mean, we've got some examples we could show where, you know, it's quite an interesting question because you deploy the equipment and so the opportunity to see actually quantitatively measure how things were before we were there and how things are after is not so common, right? But there are instances that I can call on where, you know, we deployed a version of our system, right? According to the customer's SLP, so we just do it as we like, it's just safer. And over time, you know, the customer's quite ingenious, right? And they figured out, right, if we change our SOP and safely now with the system, we can get some efficiency gains there. And so we saw some of our well swap times go from, you know, upwards of 15 minutes, you know, and it of course varies. You know,
right, yeah. Like,
that's a longer version of it.
Depends how fast people
walk. Of course, yeah. And I always put that caveat around it because it's not a solid number, right? But in this case, it went from around 15 minutes downwards to closer to about two and a half or even less.
Holy cow, man, that's huge. And
that's
fantastic.
It was pulled off and deployed without there being any issues.
That's awesome.
So, and of course, like for those that are listening, I mean, there's cases where your well slots might be less than that already, and that's fine. We got others that went from like 7 minutes down to, you know, around that 1 minute mark, or even less. But again, it really depends on what you're doing in between those swaps as well.
Right.
We use the time for maintenance and other things. So
yeah. Well, this is exciting. I mean, having this advisory board and trying to work together, and you know, I mean, that means like next year when we get together at HFPC again, you guys will have even more interest. Hopefully, there'll be some kind of standard. You know.
Yeah.
And it's always fantastic to be on the group that's setting the standards, right? I mean, that's
we're trying
best of all worlds, right? If you can get everybody together and agree on something, and you had a hand in that, that's helping the industry as a whole. You know, this type of technology making things safer for everybody. You know, more efficient. I mean, yeah. I mean, so I feel like a broken record because I end up saying this every time. I mean, this is all of this new technology is just the thing I love about our industry, right? Is that we find ways to make things safer, more efficient, produce more energy for everybody. I mean, we're amazing, aren't we?
We should
all high five ourselves. That's what I think. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for being on the show today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Thank Jim.
Thanks for tuning into our show. Please check out the show notes for the links we discussed in the podcast. We value your opinions. So if you have any questions or comments, kindly email them to us at deepdive@worldoil.com. Additionally, we'd appreciate it if you could rate us on your preferred podcast listening app. Lastly, don't forget to visit worldoil.com for the latest technical articles and news about the oil and gas industry.